Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Welcome, Moors and Moorish Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay. And this evening, we will be dealing with Moorish love, truth, peace, freedom, and justice. We'll be answering the following questions. Who is the first one Moors should love? Which truth should Moors seek? How do Moors be free in a lawless society? How should Moors get peace in America? Why should Moors have a government? How should Moors get justice in America? These questions and much more we're going to deal with this evening. And so you all sit tight, and I'm going to ask if you all would go ahead and if you got questions and comments, go ahead and raise your hand. And I see we got an early hand raised there. So before we get started, we'll open up the line. Area code 267. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, what's on your mind.
My name is, well, I am called Erica Malone.
Hey, Erica.
How are you?
Yes, fine.
Yeah, I just, yeah, we're Facebook friends. I just wanted to call. Yeah, I just wanted to call that I had to go upstairs to my room where it's more quiet so I can hear you better. So I am in the Alexamore Empire. I'm a national of the Alexamore Empire, and I just was interested in what you were talking about today.
Okay, well, just sit tight, and we'll put it all out there so you can hear what we're discussing.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, the first one of these points that I'm going to deal with is love. We're going to deal with that, and I want to deal with that from a common sense perspective. Okay, if you will. Let me add right now before we get started, for those of you who do not have my archives, I encourage you to get in those archives because there's a ton of helpful information in there. In fact, I've spoken to three different people today, and they are having a ball. Yeah, one guy, he's the bank trying to run. We got another. He grew up in the courtroom. He shut that down. It's the popo too. And they say they're going to come in and tell us what happened. So I'll be looking forward to them coming in. And we got a lot of other information that I want you to pay close attention to. Keep in mind, once again, if you got a question or comment, go ahead and raise your hand. We'll open up the line. We'll let you in. But in the meantime, we are going to deal with love. For my free articles, just send me an email. Say, Tahaka, give me them free articles, and send that email to tahaka53@hotmail.com, and I'll rush that rat to you. That's the commerce game and how to play, and the 14th Amendment exposed, as well as this other article called Secrets in America that comes straight out the mouth of a retired judge. So for those free articles, just give me a call, and we'll rush them right on that to you. Now, if you want to talk to me in person, you'll have to call me after 10:30 a.m. in the morning and before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in the evening. That's area code 904-303-9061, okay? So I look to hear from you all. Also, on the third of this month, we'll be in Louisiana teaching law. So make sure if you're there that you contact Mr. Mike Robertson, L, at area code 225-445-6018. That's Mike Robertson, L, at 225-445-6018, okay? And that's at the end of this month. On the 16th through the 18th, we'll be hosting our Morris Summit right here in Jacksonville, Florida. We have you accommodated in the Windsor Hotel. And for more information on that, just give me a call at 904-303-9061. Okay, let's get into this love thing in just a moment, okay? So y'all sit back and we'll be right back.
Be sure to subscribe to NBTV at NBTV1.com. That cares.
Listen up, Morph. This week, we will be adding your survival link to Tahaka Archives. Just go to tahakaarchives.org and get yourself in there. Give me a call. We'll have all your articles there in PDF format. We may put some word there, but we'll definitely have tons of video for you, so you can actually see how to go about surviving and increasing and sharpening your survival skills. We're going to add that along with a ton of other information. The way you access it, simply go to tahakaarchives.org. After you do that, contact me, Tahaka Monteo Bay, at area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'll see you there. Okay. Now, let's deal with the love issue. Ladies and gentlemen, from a and I just want you to just think about this for a moment. And let's use your imagination on this, if you will. Before you, and I've said this over and over and over, before you can love anybody, the first person you have to love is you. You got to start with you. That's where you get your practice from. You don't pay close attention to yourself and make sure that everything that you're doing involving your own self, your brain, you want to guard that, your body, your personal hygiene, your diet, your health, all these things you have to remain conscious of, and you have to make sure that you are exercising full love of self. Love of self puts you in a position where you can afford to love somebody else. You cannot love anybody else if you haven't loved yourself. So when it comes to your spouse and it comes to someone outside of yourself, you're in a position now to be able to exercise some type of a love. Now, there are many different levels of love. There's the agape love, and you know about that. But I want to keep this thing down on a no nonsense level, right on the grassroots level. I want you to understand that we want to talk about your love for your nation and for your people and your kind. That is something that every nation on the face of this earth is involved in, embracing their own kind and staying connected to themselves. And when you do that, you can act cohesively. We got this thing, a lot of us do have this thing in our mind that we're supposed to love everybody. Well, that's quite interesting, because everybody else outside your species is loving themselves and embracing their kind. And we haven't quite seemed to understood the value of that. A lot of us say that we believe in the Creator. We have the Bible. We go to church. And the Creator said, I made the birds after their kind. I made the cows, the cattle after their kind, and all the creeping things after their kind. Now, and then all through the book in the Old Testament, it clearly tells you to be separate. Keep yourself separate. Go ahead and build what belongs to you first. Now, that doesn't have anything to do with racism. And a lot of people say, well, that's being separate. You are separatist. You can call it what you want to call it. But I know one thing. If we unite and start doing right by one another and loving one another, embracing one another, and following the instructions that's put down by our Creator about self-love, and self-association and community association and nation association, they would be much better off. You cannot love everybody. When you try to embrace everybody, you scatter. Because all these other nations, you go right over there in Houston, that's Chinatown. You go up in there, the Chinese running everything up in there. You go to little Haiti, go to little Cuba. All these people are doing what they have to do among them, their own selves. And they're never accused of being separatists. But now here you go, trying to love everybody and trying to embrace everybody and trying to mix with everybody, and then you scatter. And we got this other thing. We're suffering from what's called self-hate. And we have to replace that with self-love. You got to get rid of that. That's absolutely no good. That doesn't do you any good. And I don't want to just be preaching at you this afternoon, but I'm just trying to get you to understand the importance of self-love and association with your kind. That does not mean you ought to hate anybody. Okay? That doesn't mean that. But you want to be quick to begin to build among your own people. I mean, everybody else on earth is doing it. They're successful. You got a lot of some nations say they will not even hire you to work in their business. All their people working in there look like them. But we, on the other hand, for some unknown reason, we seem to think that it makes us better try to be connected, get some type of approval from somebody else that doesn't really care anything about you. Because if they did, you'd have something. There are millions of us all across the United States. We represent millions and millions of dollars. And we're all about purchasing power. There is no power in purchasing. None. No such thing. So, How we one of the major ways that we can own something, control some things, is when we start working on unity. Unity. I had one gentleman hit me up on one of his social sites or somewhere on there. He said, "I have, you know, I'm married to an Irish woman or something." And I wrote him back a letter. I said, "Well, brother, could you please tell me what is it that you need her fur for that a sister of African descent could not provide for you?" And so far, I haven't heard an answer from the brother. I see it all the time, and I'm trying to figure out how is that enhancing us. I don't understand. Okay, so we got sisters all over the United States not married, nice women, intelligent, a lot to offer, but the brothers are running over here. Well, I'm gonna get me a Caucasian woman, and that'll make me somebody. I'm trying to figure out how, with what kind of way. And I just wanted to add that. And keep in mind that this ain't got nothing to do with racism I'm talking about. I'm talking to you about doing what everybody else is doing. Chinese, they love it and marry Chinese. Mexicans love it and marry Mexicans. Cuban. Well, here you go, running over there when I'm over in this to get so. Well, I just wanted to add that little bit of information now.
How would Satan do that?
You good Bible reading people?
Uh-oh.
Huh? Why would he do something like that?
Yeah.
Why would Satan give himself the title of God? To fake you out, right? Okay? So does the white mean purity?
Mm-hmm.
Purity means
God.
God.
That's right.
And God means rule of the land. So he called himself white. Meanwhile, he called everybody else something other than white.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So he was cloned. He was originally designed to be a robot, a slave. There was one problem. By us being gods, we could not give him a center. A center is the source of all melanin. Okay? You know that, you know what I'm saying?
Sun kiss.
That pigment. You must have a spirit in order to sustain pigment. It's the source.
Teeth.
Okay? So we could not give them. We give it. They used to look just like us. That's a sun kiss. They would look like a raisin. They were so ripe. They were the same hue on both sides of the hand. They were just blessed. But by them not having a spirit source, they could not sustain the hue. And as a result of that, they developed diseases. The greatest of these are called leprosy, which withdrew the pigment from the skin and left them pale.
That's right.
Skin. Okay? And it became so diseased and disordered, we had to move them into a penitentiary where that they could be locked away from humans without affecting them. That place is named after one of the African goddesses called Europe. Why is it that all the rest of the continents begin with A except for that penitentiary?
Come on.
It was bound on one side, on the north side, by the Arctic. On the west side, by the Atlantic, and knowing they couldn't swim. Okay. On the south side, by the Caucasus Mountain in the Mediterranean.
That's right.
Now here comes the real good part. I hope y'all got the seatbelts on.
Yeah.
On the east side, it was held down by peninsulas until they ran to another part of the continent. So some of our other children, called Chinese, they built a wall over 2,000 miles long, 30 feet high.
Right.
Like a penitentiary. Have you ever wondered why all penitentiary walls are 30 feet? You ever wondered about that? Ask people in China. They built the wall 30 feet high with shot towers every so often.
That's right.
Right. You ever seen the Great Wall?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It was designed on the east side to keep them from coming any further. Okay. So that made it a complete penitentiary. And it stayed that way until that boy, Moses, went up there acting crazy. Got to sharing the blessings out of Egypt. Do you know that all prophets came, got their blessings out of Egypt?
That's right.
I'm talking about from Adam all the way to Drew Ali.
See?
And that includes Muhammad.
That's right.
Okay? Those who did not go to Kemet to get the blessing,
that's right,
the education, all right, then Kemet sent an angel to them. That angel is an adept of African descent. I'm an angel. I'm so afraid of them. But one, if you look around, there's angels all around you.
Teach the lesson, mom.
Yeah. Okay. So the angel that taught Muhammad, it took him 23 years. They call him Jibril. How many of you are into Islam anyway? Anybody? Don't commit yourself if you're not sure. Because you may not know what Islam really is.
Right.
You will
right.
Before the night's over, though. Okay? But it took a committee and adept 23 years to teach Islam to Muhammad. And once Muhammad finally got it down to his science, he said, I have perfected for you this day your religion. I'm going to call it Islam. Because he was able to transliterate from the committee language into the Arabic. It was Arabic. Arabic language, okay, the teachings of the ancient ones. And that's what he wrote the Quran with. It came all out of Kemet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So did Abraham, Solomon, David, I can run up and down the line, it don't matter. If they were the prophet, they got their teachings out of Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Except for one people. Never had a prophet, including Levi. You know, the one that wrote the Quran Gospel of Jesus the Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine that? Just think about that for a minute. Someone going to sit around and write an Quran Gospel about a Persian master and then call him Jesus.
Mm.
And we accepted it because we didn't know no better. We were knocking the head so hard, we didn't know what was going on.
That's right.
Okay? And we'll accept any kind of God because what? You must remember the original law of the Mayan said you should not serve no God outside of the self or that God will enslave you.
Mm.
That's the real law.
Mm.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're talking about the Ten Commandments. That's to have no God before me. That's what you heard. That's not the way it was left Egypt.
That's right. That's right.
When know thyself, what it said then was, you should have no God, serve no God outside of the self. That's what it said. Because if you did, that God would enslave you. It ain't but one God that's in you. Now, I know you're going to put the cross on me and call me blasphemy and stuff. But we gave a challenge to Oregon, and again, I want to extend much honor to the souls of Oregon because they invited us back again. We were here about a year ago, two or three of us, Sister Black Bay and my wife Aisha, myself, and Brother Kenny. He's been working tirelessly. That was, woo. He's a result of everybody being here right now.
That's right.
So I want to extend much honor to Brother Kenny Portier-L, if you will. Also, the brother that has been assisting him, Brother Rashid, the two of them.
Rashid.
So, and the message that you're going to receive tonight is one that you don't have to worry about it anymore. Okay? You don't have to worry about nothing anymore because you're here. Okay? The return, you are the return of the ancient one. Okay, you don't have to borrow nothing no more. You don't have to steal nothing no more.
That's right.
None of that. Everything you got from here is yours. Okay? The flag, that's yours. It's not the flag of Morocco, but it's got the 5-point open green star of your forefathers. The star alone is over 10,000 years old. I'm sorry. Did I say that? Over 100,000 years ago.
That's right.
Okay? The star itself is just as old as the fall of man itself because the open star represents God in man.
That's right. Come on.
Okay? The open star. Now, if you notice this flag right here, it's got some 5-pointer stars too. See?
Mm-hmm.
50 of them. 50.
Mm-hmm.
But every last one of them is closed.
Mm-hmm.
A closed star let you know that there is boundaries, there's jurisdiction, there's limitations. Okay, that's why you got 50 of them. Okay, each one represents a state, but the one that represents Oregon can't interfere the one that represents Texas, because Oregon ain't got no jurisdiction in Texas. That's why it's closed. Only Oregon can use it. Okay? But the 5-pointer open green star, which has, it's like a circle. Once you put the pin down, you don't have to pick it up no more to all 5 points are completed. Each point at each interval represents 72 degrees, a maximum efficiency times 5, gives you 360, a completion. Okay? There is no limitation.
Come on, man.
None. There's no boundaries.
Knowledge,
why? Right. Because you can't put boundaries on love. You can't put limitations on truth. Okay? All right? You're not going to find peace in a closed environment at the barrel of a gun. Okay? And freedom is always in the heart.
Yes, sir. Yes,
okay?
Sir.
That's why the star is really God and man. As above, so below. Take a look at that flag. And I want you to hear the words of Noble Drew Ali, with whom we are all here for, okay? Noble Drew Ali described, he said, well, what kind of flag is the Moorish?
Red flag.
Okay? Now, I want you to listen very carefully with his questionnaire. And we do have these. You can get this, you know, a couple bucks right there, okay? And the questionnaire says, what kind of flag is the Moorish? A lot of Moors would raise the flag of Morocco. Talk about, it's a red flag with a five-pointed green star in the center. But let me tell you more something. That's not the Moorish flag. It's the flag of Morocco, true. But Morocco and Moorish are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You are Moorish.
That's right.
Okay? Morocco turned their back on you. Sold you into slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Under the Mohammedan rule that they call Islam, as taught by the Arabs, they call themselves Sunnis and Sufis and Shiites and things. They were sick.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, back to this love. Now, how does one go about developing love for self, love for his nation, and embracing his culture and his story? It comes from investigation. You want to get a hold to the information. Now, there's tons of it in my archives, but you can also get a book called Of Water and the Spirit by Maladoma Patrice Somme. You might want to get a book called The Moors in Spain by Stanley Lane Poole. The Destruction of African Civilization by Chancellor Williams. Nature Knows No Color Line by J.A. Rogers. Introduction to African Civilization by John G. Jackson. And, of course, all the works of John Henrik Clark. And this is very, very powerful information. And what I always like to put my light out so that it will shine. And I remember when I was working for these companies, I would go out, and when they saw me come to work, I always had a book about my culture written by an author that looked like me. And people would see me not only reading these books, but cross-referencing with these books and writing information down, because I wanted to make it perfectly clear to them that I'm interested in my culture and in my story. And according to what I know, it supersedes all other stories and cultures, because this belongs to me. This is my love that I have for myself, and I'm showing you that which way I'm embracing and which way I'm going. I'm not trying to love everybody. I got to love me first before I even get in a position to think about loving somebody else. I got to embrace myself. I got to embrace my kind. I got to embrace my culture first. Now, I noticed that when I begun to do that, I was respected by other races that worked in the company. The only problem that I had was from people who look like me. It was the most amazing thing, where they had the attitude that, don't worry, master, we'll get this awful, awful black man for you, because he's coming in here with books about our culture and our story. And God said we're supposed to love everybody. And, you know, so don't worry, we'll get him for you. You ain't got to worry. I know you're scared to say anything to him. I know you afraid to try to hold a conversation with him, because every time you do, he begins to tell you the truth from his position, and it's what he's supposed to do, and everybody look like him supposed to do. But he's an evil, evil, wicked man, because he ain't like us. We trying to love everybody. So they attempted to throw me under the bus, drag me out in front of them, to do all kind of stuff. And it was the most amazing circumstance. And we still have this same type of mindset today. We got to get away from that. We got to stop that, man. That is no good. That don't. I mean, I'm trying to understand what makes a man feel like he has to try to destroy his brother in front of the face of the children whose forefathers were the murderers of his own ancestors. Help me with that. What kind of thing is it? I mean, if you don't want to love yourself and you don't want to be yourself, why would you attack your brother when he's trying to do it? He ain't stolen nothing from you. He ain't lied on you. He hasn't injured you. He hasn't disrespected you. He's busy trying to love himself. And he's being attacked by you, his own brother. It's amazing. Never seen anything like it. I mean, my goodness. I have my work cut out for me. But self-love is where you start. When you start dealing with self-love, and you start getting in position to export that, you'll be surprised how much respect you have from other people, because you're doing what you are supposed to do. That's what you're supposed to be doing. So when we say, "Well," and I'm not picking on anybody. I'm a Baptist. I'm a Christian. I'm Presbyterian. I'm holiness. Okay. Tell me what you know about Christianity itself and the religion called Christianity. Have you taken the time to learn anything about it? If you claim to believe in it, what is it about it that you know? If you don't know anything, then why would you claim something that you don't know absolutely nothing about? I had a lady tell me one time, she say, I don't mess with that Islam stuff. I belong to the church, and Jesus said so and so and so and so, and I don't want nothing to do with no Islam. I said, well, ma'am, could you please tell me what is it that you know about Islam? Well, I don't know nothing about it. You know, I'm just saying, that's okay, hold up. Now, you are really confusing me now, because you said that you didn't want anything to do with something that you knew absolutely nothing about it. You seem to be trying to tell me in an indirect way that you have a certain amount of brain damage, because I don't understand that. How could you not want anything to do with it and don't like something you don't know nothing about? How? Is it possible? Are you listening to what you're saying to me? Because you are amazing. So if you belong to something, I would think common sense would tell me, if I belong to something, the least I can do is learn everything about what I belong to. I don't know about you, but that just is just common sense to me. That's all. That's the, you know, that's the only way I can put it. But self-love and embracing your own self and trying to be associated with your people is the way to go, and to build with your people. I have a caller on the line. Area code 708. Tell us who you are, where you calling from. Let us know what's on your mind.
How you doing, Brother Talk? This is Michael Johnson Bay. I spoke with you earlier about the Bank of America situation.
Oh, yeah. Well, tell us all about that, man.
Okay. So far, Bank of America was trying to foreclose on my grandmother's house and pursuing it very hard. And I end up bumping into Brother Tahaka, and he told me about the archive. So once I made a donation of $60, I got started on that, and basically I sent them an affidavit telling them to basically send me everything that was concerning the loan that they claimed my grandmother took out, and the escrow, and just tons of information, you know, that goes with a loan. And basically, they sent me back something saying, well, for their customer's privacy and whatsoever, that they cannot relieve that information. It gave me 2 weeks to send them an executor's letter and a you know, my proof of claim to saying who I am and how do I have matters to that matter. So they basically tried to hurry up and undercut me and rush me and give me a little short period of time, which they felt that I wouldn't be able to get that information. So what I did next was send them another affidavit in my grandmother's name. So they gave me a little bit more time. But as of right now, now what they're trying to send is, are we not the holders of the note? And, you know, basically trying to take the focus off themselves and throw it at somebody else, because that's a lot of fraudulent activity in there. And it's kind of crazy that when you start filling out paperwork and studying and becoming conscious of what they're doing, how they get scared and try to throw the blame on someone else and try to pretend like they on your side. But just 3 weeks ago, you was trying to foreclose and take somebody out of their home. You know, so it's crazy. So right now, they trying to say that they not told up the note and send me somewhere else. But I'm going to continue to the administrative process on Bank of America, because they were the ones trying to foreclose on the property. So I'm not going to let them off easy, you know, because I'm going to stay focused on them. And just basically, it's like, it's crazy how, you know, the people that you think that have so much power really ain't got no power. The only power they have is the power that we let them have over us. Because really, really, a mortgage is not, you know, it's not something that you really pay on property, because how can you let somebody charge you for something that was free to you and your constitutional right? So only thing they doing is fixing up abandoned buildings in our neighborhoods and filing a lien against them in the courtrooms and foreclosing them and selling it to us for 3 times the amount that they paid for it, when we can do that ourselves. But banks cannot own property, so therefore, once you start figuring out and becoming conscious, you know, of what they're doing, the only way they can take your home from you is by the trustee. They set up a trust when you sign a, when you sign, fill out a mortgage loan with them. They set up a trust, and they assign a trustee that they trust. And during the foreclosure period, if you don't respond to it, they assign a trustee to sign over your property, because a trustee works for you, and you have rights to fire the trustee. So if you fire the trustee, the banks have no claim to your property. And a lot of people are not aware of, when they receive a foreclosure letter, that that they just saying that you owe them money and they're going to take your property if you don't pay up. And what your job is to tell them to prove how you owe them any type of money, to provide documents of the money that they claim that you received. And 9 times out of 10, they can't, because what they do is create fake money. What they do is not real money, so they cannot provide that.
Okay. Well, brother, I'm certainly glad you called in, and I appreciate you getting the archives, and you're well on your way, and you're doing a whole lot of things, and there's a ton of information in there. And we will be adding the survival information tomorrow. So it'll be coming in probably tomorrow evening, because I'll spend most of the day on it. And there's a ton of information on survival, so you might want to check that out too while you're in the archive.
Okay.
All right. Okay, I got another caller. Let me get to the next caller here, Michael.
All right.
All right. Peace. Thanks, brother.
Peace.
Area code 901. Come on in.
Brother Tahaka, what's going on? Brother John.
Hey, man, what's going on? Okay,
man,
we got another man with Tahaka's archives. What happened?
Well, today I went to went to court after being summoned last month on the 11th of February. Just to kind of give everybody that's listening, I guess, kind of a prelude to this whole court case, I was leasing.
Speak up a little bit.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, speak up a little louder.
Is that any better?
Hello? Okay, still kind of low.
Hold on 1 second. Let me see if I can say something. Okay, can you hear me any better now?
Okay, that's a little better.
Okay. Yeah. Well, what happened was about the fall of last year, 2012, actually mm-hmm. summertime, I met a lady that was an in-law, family of law to this young lady that I was dating. Now, this lady, she had been working overseas with security contracts and had been making better, more or less six figures. And she spent about a year and a half overseas making good money. But what nobody told her when she left and came back over here to America, that, you know, it wasn't no jobs in the United States. So what basically ended up happening is she got put in a position to where she had to figure out a way to take care of her personal obligations. She was unemployed while she was here. And after me and her had several discussions, we came to the agreement that we would do a lease on the property that she had with the ability to with the ability to look at purchasing after the lease was over. Now, mind you, that I told you she was having economic hardship, a hard time coming by money. So about October or so, she tells my girlfriend at the time that she only has enough money in her savings account to pay her mortgage for about another month or two, and that she was going to have to relocate. And either one or two things, she was going to have to put his house on the market and let it be sold, or either find a buyer to buy it. And we went ahead and did a lease on the property, six-month lease from November to May, I think it was. But either way, some terms that we had agreed upon before we signed the lease, about a week or so before the lease was presented to me, she went back and did some things of her own. The house was supposed to be fully furnished when I did the lease. She took all of the furniture, washing machine, dryer, all that good stuff, and I ended up having to come up with about $3,000 or $4,000 to basically furnish a two-story house within a matter of a week. And, you know, I went on signing the lease. I understood why she did what she did. When people don't have money, they tend to do things irrationally that they wouldn't normally do if they had money. And I understood that. But anyway, moving forward, we did business. I paid the lease. And in December and January, as a commercial job, I drive trucks. So what ended up happening as a result of that, checks would come back to her property manager, and I would end up having to go, when I got back in town, give her certified funds for the rent or the lease payment. And, you know, every payment was documented. I had proof of it. And like I said, this is basically at the time I'm considering her to be family. So, you know, she's honest with me, I'm honest with her, and we know we got a good understanding, at least I thought so. But this past month, in January, some things changed for me financially. About the 14th of January, I made sure that she knew that things had changed for me financially and that, you know, basically just putting her up on notice, letting her know, look, my income had basically been cut in half, so, you know, you might not be getting the rent on time like I had thought. You know, you may get it later on in the month, but you'll get it. And, her response to me, when I asked her for remedy, if there should arise a problem, she told me basically, and I quote, "I ain't got no fucking remedy for you. Excuse my French," but, you know, at that point, that was when I realized I was dealing with a fool. And my grandfather told me a long time ago, the biggest problem with dealing with a fool is when you try to talk knowledge to them, they run from it. But either ways, as a result of that conversation, she got her lease payment for January, about the last week of January, and how her payment was set up. When I pay her leasing agent or the property management company, it takes them about 2 weeks or so to get the money from my account, credit the account, and send out a check or a payment to her. So more or less, it was taking her about 3 weeks to a month to get rent money. And she contacted me on the first week of February, basically saying, look, stop paying your rent late because I can't afford it. Now, at that point, whatever her personal obligations were, they didn't matter to me because they were hers. But after we had spoke, what she basically told me was that she was depending on me to pay her the lease at that property in order for her to make her rental payment for this new property she had went into contract on. But either way, I talked to her and basically summed it up to let her know that, look, whatever you are personally responsible for, that's not an obligation of mine. I don't have anything to do with that, which is fact and which is true. So as an attempt to extort some money from me, what she did, the lease payment was due on the 1st through the 5th of every month with a five-day grace period. On the 6th of February, she had her property manager to serve a three-day notice to quit the premises or pay the rent for February. What I did when I received that document, all of us here pretty much, know about common law trust, and common law trust is really nothing more essentially than contract law. And upon looking at the document, I saw there were six documents laying on that page, and four corner rules tell you anything that lays in the four corners of one document, they have nothing to do with another document. So this would be something, kind of identical to maybe a credit card statement, something like that. Now, when I see box information, it has nothing to do with that presentment, that instrument. And with me knowing that, I basically formed the affidavit letting her know that, look, your notice is fraudulent. This could be considered as an attempt to extort somebody, all that good stuff, everything that I found that was wrong with it lawfully. And Most High, he was telling me that I needed to take a look at my lease. And since I had signed the lease, I hadn't looked at it. And like I told y'all earlier, I had to come up with a good amount of money at the signing of the lease. So I signed the lease under duress and wasn't really paying attention to what I was supposed to have been paying attention to, signing a contract. But when I looked at that lease, I saw that the property manager had forged my name on the contract on the date, on the entrance date of the contract to make it effective, which was November 1st. And November 1st, I want to say I was in Atlanta, Georgia on November 1st. So when I actually did get back to sign the lease, it was November 5th. And what I saw then was that after saying that, my name had basically been forged and it was a fraudulent contract, I saw that even when they presented the contract to me, it was a four-page contract or lease agreement, and I was only given three. So in my affidavit of fact that I sent off to them, I stated that as well, that, look, y'all done basically signed my name as fraud, and you're asking me to pay stuff and you ain't got no legal contract, no binding agreement with me. I need to see, find out what y'all got to say about it in short. And like most idiots do, they received it. I sent it to them via a certified mail with the U.S. Post Office. I got the return receipt back. She received it the next day, we're in the same city. So she received it and didn't really pay it any attention. She kind of took it, laughed at it, and didn't understand what it was about. So later on that weekend, the landlord calls me and asks me, am I going to pay, and I quote this, when am I going to pay fucking rent? And I told her that we don't have a binding agreement, so I'm not obligated to do anything for her. And she, went on with a cussing, dropping the F-bombs, and, this is BS, and, you know, I'm just sitting there entertaining it all. And one thing she never allowed to happen, even when I tried to approach her, you know, I simply said to her, look, let me explain to you what's going on so you won't think that you have been wrong. And she, you know, more or less hung up in my face, got off the phone. And before she hung up, she did tell me, or she asked me, rather, was I going to stay there rent-free? And I reiterated to her, look, we don't have a binding agreement, so I'm not obligated to pay you any rent. Now, I never told her I was going to stay there rent-free. I simply told her we didn't have a binding agreement, so I'm not obligated to pay you anything. By this point and by this time, I'm thinking in terms of, okay, this may have to go to court, so let me start deflecting things onto the straw man, onto this legal fiction that I am or the government wants me to be more than. So I never told her what I would or wouldn't do personally, privately. I just told her, you know, general law, contract law. You know, if you're not, you don't have a claim or proof of it, you know, you can't obligate or make anybody do anything. And if you do force somebody, you're looking at involuntary servitude.
Okay.
But I told her basically, look, if you want me to leave or you want to get this taken care of, you know, let's do an eviction process. So she was hype about that, and she got her property manager the following Monday on the 11th of February to file the eviction process with the Justice Court. And they summoned me, I want to say that was February 12th. They summoned me on the 12th to appear in court on basically today.
Okay. So you went to court today?
Went to court today. So
okay.
I get to court, and she has 1,000,001 witnesses to what has taken place, but nobody ever witnessed or saw anything. So, you know, I could be wrong. She may have had enough for moral support. But either way, what happened when we got into the courtroom was very interesting. When I entered the courtroom this morning, they, of course, had me empty my pockets and all that good stuff and go through a metal detector. And they asked me, are you being sued or are you suing someone? And I told them, well, I guess I'm being sued. I don't know, which was true. As far as I knew, they sent a summons out to an all-caps entity, which I know in maritime law is either a fictitious or, excuse me, a legal entity operating in commerce or a dead person, you know. And so with that being said, I didn't know for sure if they were suing me or not, so I told them, you know, I guess, I don't know. And he said, well, find your name on the roster and sign it. So by this time, I'm thinking, okay, well, this is already something that they got in motion to say, well, look, somebody just gave me a signature saying that, look, I'm this person.
Uh-huh.
So what I did, I signed the role, but I signed the role in my upper and lower case.
Okay.
And black ink. Black ink, we know, is dead. You know, anything black is not living.
Okay.
So we get into court, and she does a roll. The judge, they pronounce the judge. She comes out. She does a roll call, and she asks me more or less. She calls my name or calls the case, and I say present. Now, when I said present, I put my hand over my mouth because I've learned that whenever you're talking law, somebody can call you and you say you're somebody, and when you meet them in person, you can say simply, look, I'm not that person. It's just simply a disembodied voice over the phone, you know, and all she wanted to know was whether somebody was present or not for that case. And so court went on, and she finally got to the case. And she called my landlord's name, which was Raven Wells, and mine, which is a name that sounded like mine. Phonetically, it sounded like mine, but literally, it's not the same thing. She called Raven Wells versus John Criddle, and understanding that the courtroom is set up in such a certain way, the banister or the bar that divides where you see generally the general public and your lawyers, that's called the bar or the bank.
Okay.
And once you enter that bar or that bank or in maritime admiralty law, it's called the canal. Once you enter into or through that canal, you enter into a sea of commerce because the whole purpose of the court is money. My wife
right.
today, in about more or less 10 minutes, they had collected over $3,500 in revenue, I mean, within 10 minutes. And, you know, I'm sitting
okay.
there thinking to myself, well, hell, I may be in the wrong business. but more or less, man, like I said, they called the case, and I allowed my landlord and her property manager to walk through the bar, past the bar, and on through the canal, which when you do that, you leave what they call the law of the land or common law trust, and you enter into the Sea of Commerce, and the Sea of Commerce is governed by maritime admiralty law. Now, most
right.
people don't know this, and I knew exactly what was going on, so I hung back. I got close to the bar, and I simply said to the judge, Your Honor, I'm here in regards to that matter. And her response was, who are you? What's your name? And I said, well, ma'am, do you want an appellation? And she said, who are you? I said, ma'am, do you want my appellation? You know, my calling to that type of thing to recognize me. Who are you? I said, ma'am, do you want my appellation? You know what? Just sit down, or I'm going to hold you in contempt of court. So I say, well, I hadn't given you any jurisdiction over me, and I don't know that I'm in your jurisdiction. So I said, if you have proof of what you're claiming, I said, then by all means, you know, basically, you know, put me in contempt of court. And she sat me down, and at this point, she realized, and I saw the look on her face, more or less, you know, oh, shit, you know. So she sits me down, and she begins to clear the courtroom, calling case by case by case to get everybody out of there. And, you know, this is going on. I mean, I'm sitting there literally chuckling and laughing, and she's getting pretty upset with me. So I knew it was what I was doing was working when I saw the other lawyers that was there representing other legal firms. They were basically gathering their briefcase and documents and getting out the courtroom. So she called the case again, Raven Wells versus John Criddle, and I got up and I said, ma'am, I'm here in regards to that matter. What's your name? I said, do you want my appellation, ma'am? What is your name? I said, do you want my appellation? Look, who are you? I said, ma'am, in this situation, I'm a creditor. But do you want my appellation? Look, I'm going to hold you into contempt of court if you don't give me your name. I said, ma'am, I'm trying to find out whether you want to know if I'm a legal fiction or a natural person. And when I said that, the courtroom got quiet for about 3 or 4 minutes. I mean, just pure silence. And she quit making contact with me and was just kind of doodling in a notebook or whatever. And she
okay.
looked back up at me, and she said, bailiff, escort this man out of the court. So I'm standing there, and the sheriffs, they start to approach me, and I simply ask them, look, is this an act of intimidation? I said, y'all a peace officer. Y'all need to go sit down. I said, y'all public service, man. And when I said that, they backed up. And now
uh-huh.
where I live at, racism is still prevalent here in Mississippi. And
okay.
you got a lot of, I'll say, people of the Caucasian race that don't care to hear a more talking with dignity, intelligence, and understanding really how to conduct yourself, not even just in a law of court, I mean a court of law, but just in public general.
Uh-huh.
But one thing I never let happen was I never got out of character or started to act dishonorably in court. And by me never giving a name or agreeing to a name that she was calling, I never gave jurisdiction. So, like I said, she's in admiralty law, and she's wanting me to come on to her side. So what she asked me to do is to go outside and talk with her sheriffs. And I said, I will, as long as, you know, it's going to help us proceed forward. So I, you know, go outside with the sheriffs, and they take me into a little room off to the side. And this big white guy, he says, buddy, what's your beef, man? you know, you come in here disrupting my judge's court, and, you know, you I got to be honest with you. Ain't nobody ever come in this courtroom and say what you're saying now. You know, when people usually come in here, you know, they just be quiet and go on and do whatever the judge tells them. I said, well, sir, I said, I'm under the understanding that there's some things that I overstand that you don't understand yet. I said, so to address your inquiry, no, I don't have any beef with this court or the judge or yourself. I said, now, what I'm trying to do is figure out what she wants from me so we can move forward with this proceeding. Well, do you have an identification? I said, yeah, I have identification. He said, well, let me see your driver's license. I said, hold on. Why would I want a driver's license, man? I said, that's a contract. That ain't no identification. Oh, okay, so how did you get here today? Didn't you drive? I said, no, man. I told you, you know, I don't need no license. I said, I travel. Well, I go, I got rights. I'm American, not a United States citizen. I said, but to answer your question, no, I didn't drive today. Somebody dropped me off. I said, no, somebody drove me here, and I rode with them. And I said, I got out of my conveyance. I said, no, I didn't drive here. I said, driving is a commercial activity. I said, you know, I didn't come here to make no money today. I came here to clear my name.
So, okay,
well, look, what you got for identification, sir? Because right now, you know, I got a good mind to hold you in contempt of court or at least take you down to the jail. I said, sir, you can do that if you prove you got jurisdiction over me. So what I hand him as identification is an affidavit of identity. And then the affidavit of identity, I give him this instrument that is one signed by a notary public in DeSoto County. And on the affidavit of identity, I have a picture there on me that I took this morning right before I left to go to court. And I went and put on the affidavit of identity and basically said to them that, look, I'm fully aware that I am a spirit and body and a male human anatomy that is considered to be a natural person that is flesh and bone. I said, also I recognize and understand that my creator is God the Almighty, the creator of all that exists and lives. I said, being that I only subject myself to God's will, his law, and his authority, I said, and also in the affidavit, I told him basically that I would not be granting jurisdiction to any government, group of people, or person that could not prove that they are one of three things. One, they are God. Two, they are above God. Or three, give me proof of a contract, a bona fide contract that they have with God, with God's signature, saying that they have jurisdiction over me. And if you can't provide me with that, you won't be granted jurisdiction. Now, when I gave the sheriff that, his whole attitude changed. Well, buddy, you know what? Now we're buddies. That's what I like. Now we're buddies. Buddy, you know what, man? That judge in there, she's a nice lady, man, you know. And she about willing to do anything she can to help you, you know, to get out of here and make this whole process quick and easy for you. I said, well, you know, I told you when I came in here, all I wanted to do was figure out what she wanted so I could move forward with the proceeding. So he said, well, look, just go in there and show her your identification, man, and, you know, she ought to be a little more willing to help you there. So I do just what he offered. I accepted his offer. And I went on back into the courtroom, sat down. She called the case again. Raven Wells, John Criddle. I said, Your Honor, I'm here in regards to that matter. Look, what is your name? I said, do you want my appellation or do you want to call him to? Look, what is your name? I said, ma'am, do you want an appellation or a call him to? Look, come here. You, come here. I said, ma'am, I'll have to be honest with you. I don't have the accreditation to cross the bar and survive in Edmonton Law. And she got quiet. She just sat there. And I said, okay, well, what's going to happen next? And the best thing that could have happened in this situation that I did not realize was going to happen, she called me again. She said, sir, what's your name? I said, ma'am, do you want my appellation or my calling to? You know what? I'm tired of this. Look, I'm not going to recognize you anymore. I'm going to give a default judgment and favor of the plaintiff. So, you know, she gives a default judgment. And in my mind, I'm like, okay, this was the best thing that probably could have happened. say to the judge, well, look, Your Honor, I just want to go on record saying that I'm asking you for proof that I could have, asking you for proof that I did appear in a court in a response to this matter, and you disregarded me being here because I was not, the defendant on the case. And she sat there. She never said nothing. So I said, well, maybe she didn't hear me. And I asked her again. I said, Your Honor, I said, I'm asking for proof that the ruling you just made in this case was not against me, that in fact that I did appear here, and that it is fact that defendant that the defendant is not me and the case you just ruled on. And she said nothing. So by this time she signals one of the sheriffs, and he said, but it's time to go. I said, well, could you ask your judge for proof that I did appear here in court today to resolve the issue, and that she said she wasn't going to acknowledge me because I was not the party known as the defendant. Look, you're going to either be escorted out of here or you can leave. We ain't giving you nothing. I said, okay, well, that's fine. I said, but just know that I'm asking for proof that I appeared here today and the judge chose to not acknowledge me for whatever reason as the defendant of this case. And he said, well, look, buddy, it's time to go, man. So I said, okay, well, I'm going to leave, but I just wanted to be on the record that I'm not the defendant. So, you know, I go ahead and walk out of the courtroom, and the sheriff proceeds to follow me to the front door. And the other two sheriffs that I had met initially coming into the courthouse, I guess they caught wind of what had went down in court. And after the sheriff that was walking out of the courtroom with me, he saw the other two, and he said, look, man, make sure he leaves these premises. He needs to get out of here. I said, hold on, man. I came to court to handle the situation, and y'all kicked me out. And I asked the court, look, just give me some proof of what you're asking for, or give me some proof that I'm not the defendant. Oh, we ain't got to give you nothing. I said, okay, well, if that be the case, give me your names. And there was one Hispanic sheriff there. I guess he wasn't really privy to how the whole system worked. He showed me his name tag. I said, sir, that's not your name. That's a name tag. I said, for all I know, you could be Jose, but you're telling me you're Peru. And I said, I need a name from you. And what I was trying to do at this point was figure out who I was going to file a lien against. But okay, what they did was they told me, look, we law enforcement. We ain't got to tell you nothing. And I said, like, I said, y'all public officers. I said, y'all supposed to tell the public who you are, identify yourself. Look, get out of here, man. You ain't got no more business here. So, you know, after that, I went on and left.
Okay.
And, I went on and left, man, and like I said, you know, after I left, that was basically it. They ended up bringing an eviction notice to my house shortly after court, but what I'm going to do in the morning is file my executive letter and a personally written letter from the executive of the John Criddle Estate, letting the judge know, basically, look, I had a trustee in there yesterday that tried to clear my name. And I've been told by your plaintiffs that it is, in fact, that you ruled against my estate or the John Crow estate that I'm executive over. And I got to place that in the document case. And although my landlord or ex-landlord walked out of court today thinking that she owned something or won something, she's going to find out really quickly that she lost more than she ever thought she won.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I said, that was basically what happened today, man. But after all that went down, I went to Old Charlie's and got me a top shelf appetizer and some sweet tea, man. I ain't sweating nothing today.
Okay. Okay. Well, brother, I certainly appreciate you coming on in and telling us a story.
No problem, brother.
Okay, and we'll go on to the next caller. Thank you, brother.
All right, thank you.
Area code 267. 267.
Hello.
Tell us who you are. Hey.
Hello. This is Erica. But the guy
okay.
I was just talking
I would have said when the bailiff bought him, when the bailiff took him out and asked him for his ID, I would have said Quo Warranto before I said anything else. You know, Quo Warranto, by what authority are you operating under? You know?
Well, they're not. They okay. They are private contractors, and gentleman on the road has got the guns and badges. These guys are private contractors. They have absolutely no standing in law. The only one that does is the one who are officers of the law, and these are the people who have ran for office and have been elected by the people through vote. These are the officers of the law, and all others want you to believe that they have some kind of authority in law. Both of these gentlemen have that you've heard from this evening, both of them have my archives. They have studied in there, and they're able, after gleaning the knowledge, to go in and defend themselves as men and deal with the situation. And I constantly try to tell brothers and sisters, access the archives. When you do, call me. We walk you through it, get you set up so that you can deal with these people and stop being a victim of circumstances and start being a controller of circumstances. I was contacted shortly before going on the air by another brother that tomorrow he's going to have a good time in court. He has assigned his documents to the case, and it's really going to be a hoot up in there when he get there. So go to TahakaArchives.org. When you go there, access that, call me. If you got a problem with your mortgage company, debt collectors, bill collectors, this case here, one with the bank, one with leasing, you know, you don't have to be a victim. Police stops on the street, all of this here. Just access those archives, call me. That's all you got to do. We go to work. Okay, now let's get back to this to our broadcast, and I certainly appreciate the brothers calling in, and I thank them so much for their testimony this evening.
A lot of Moors would raise the flag of Morocco. Talk about it's a red flag with a five-pointed green star in the center. But let me tell you more something. That's not the Moorish flag. It's the flag of Morocco, true. But Morocco and Moorish is two different things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you are Moorish.
That's right.
Okay. Morocco turned their back on you.
Mm.
Sold you into slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Under the Mohammedan rule,
that's right,
that they call Islam, as taught by the Arab, they call themselves Sunnis and Sufis and Shiites and things. Mm-mm. They were selling you into slavery. You don't believe me? I'm going to tell you about a slave document that's very little spoken about by its true name. It was written in 1786. It was written by the Sultan of Morocco. Name was Muhammad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an agreement that was compiled with George Washington, who was the head of the Masonic Order, who was also the 9th president under the British rule and the 1st president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Mason.
Mm-hmm.
I said it.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Western Freemason. Now, let me tell you the criteria. Let me tell you the criteria for being a Mason. And I want you sisters to listen so the brother won't fake y'all out no more.
Demonstrate.
Because ain't none of them here can do nothing with Pleasant Bay. I am the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Demonstrate.
Ain't none of these brothers here that call themselves a Mason. That's not true. A real Mason, a Western Freemason, okay, must be pale skinned.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Age 21, made of sound mind and body. That's the criteria. Do you know any of them?
Mm.
George Washington was. Thomas Jefferson was. Okay? You don't believe me? Let's take a little further. Don't you brother get offended, though. Don't jump on me. Not, give me a minute. Okay. Now, when it comes down to George Washington, let's take a good look. The whole Revolutionary War was about two Masonic lodges that couldn't get along with each other over some land that didn't belong to neither one of them. Okay? Two Masonic lodges, the Scottish and York Rite Orders. Okay? They didn't agree with each other over some land that they were taking because they had firepower.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I know. Christopher Lovell discovered a place that 50 million people already using. I know about that. Okay? But these Masons, now you must remember, Western Freemasonry is set aside for one thing and one thing only, and that's to enslave the entire continent of Africa and all of its inhabitants. That's the sole purpose of Western Freemasonry. Now, I'm not talking about Masonry. There's a difference. And again, don't you bother take your hat off yet, because I ain't finished. Okay? There's a difference between Masonry, which the origin of Masonry come out of Egypt, the Grand Lodge of Luxor, okay, and what it had to do with self-mastery. You must remember, the origin of Masonry is what? Know thyself. Self-mastery. The more you know of about yourself, the more you become what? God.
That's right.
Because it's just God in human form. You must remember, it's not in the power of the flesh to think or bones to reason. So therefore, something's added unto you, God, that's unlike this. What is it? It's some level that can connect you with the original source from which you come from. That's what makes you God. Now, bear in mind, now God doesn't come in gender, so I don't hear all that stuff about, well, I'm a matriarch. It don't come in female and male form. Okay? That's a lower level. That's what? Remember I just told you, it's not in the power of the female bodies or the male bodies to do what?
Think
or reason. So ain't no God all up in there. At least not till it gets feeling good.
Go ahead, man. You tough. I love that part. Go ahead, man. Expression.
Y'all know about this false sensation, right? Ooh, baby, you know.
Lay it all, boy. Yeah. Jump with them. Teach.
And when you don't know no better, that God can take you out, too.
That's right.
Why? Because that's a God that's outside of yourself.
Yeah.
And you're using you to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But George Washington and his other Masonic brothers, we've got some Moors running around today hollering about their Masons, not realizing that they are helping to enslave their own people. Because this is what Western Freemasonry is all about.
Mm-hmm.
What they did, there were three brothers, they called it Jubilee brothers. Jubilee.
That's right.
I'm sorry. France. France, Britain, and the United States. Jubilum, of course, the United States. That's the one that set them all. Knock you in the head. That's why you look silly right now. Don't know who you are from nothing. Okay? That's that set them all. Okay? The rest of them took you out also. But they only hurt you just a little bit. And then they had the nerve to plant an acacia tree over top of your coffin.
Demonstrate it.
That also had a five-pointed star on the top of that coffin. Okay, it's called a shallow grave. You want to really know what that shallow grave looked like? Remember, George Washington was the one that dug the grave that put the coffin in it because he was a Mason. Well, you don't believe it, do you? Okay. Listen to this. When George Washington got in office, he said he wouldn't trust nothing but a Mason. All his boys, there were 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence, and all of them except two were Masons. And not one of them looked like us. Not one. Now, I know Prince Hall. No, let me tell you about Prince Hall. Don't y'all get offended. Okay? Let me ask you a question. What's the difference between a Negro slave and the free people. Anybody know? You're right. Ain't no different. They're both Negroes. Mm-hmm. And a Negro is what? A slave. No matter how you look at it. Okay? What's the difference between a black man and a free black man?
Nothing.
Nothing. They're both black. They're both slaves. Okay? Now let's get a little personal. What's the difference between an African American? Never mind. Okay, Jack. All right. Let's stick with the Masonic thing then. Okay. What's the difference between a most worshipful master who is of African descent and a black man in the street? Huh? Nothing. Why? Because they neither one of them free. Both of them are nationless, flagless, constitutionless. They got nothing really on. Nothing. That's why we're here, Portland. We're here to return to you what belongs to you.
That's right.
You ain't got to beg nobody for it. You ain't got to bend over backward, get greased up, take no oaths, none of that. I said it. Oh, by the way, let me tell you something else. We're also here to set you free.
That's right.
Okay? So those of you who have taken the oath, let me tell you something. A lot of you have taken the oath, in fact, all of you have taken the oath but didn't know it. Okay? Let me tell you how that oath thing works. If you are in a coma and someone takes advantage of you while you're in that coma, okay, are you held accountable for what happens?
No, you're not.
No, of course not. Why? Because you was in a comatose state.
You ain't no mind.
You're out of your mind. You didn't have your right sense about you. Okay? If you knew what that person was doing to you and you was in your right mind, you'd serve him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Oh, okay. So the same thing happens when you take an oath to a lodge and you don't know who you are. You don't have your free national name. You don't have your own power, your own government. Don't know who your forefathers were. None of that. And now here you go, yes, no, it don't count.
Mm-hmm.
It do not count, okay? How can you give your will to a most worshipful master if what you're going to have to left for God? That's what it's all for. That's why they get you early, all in college and stuff. Okay, all in church, sneaking you off to the side, blindfolding you, hoodwinking you.
Mm-hmm.
Please.
Teach.
How in the world is he going to save you? He's going to blindfold you too.
That's right.
How are going to give you the light? Peep through this. Yeah, I got your peep all right.
It's a trick.
Okay? Getting back to George Washington, the thing about it is, you must remember, anything that was written law-wise, between the years of 1779 to 1865, had to do with your enslavement. Okay? I said from 1779, the United States Constitution was written in that period. Article 1, the very first article, and somebody said, they said that we wrote it. There's another group of Moors that's saying there were 32 Moors wrote the Declaration of Independence, wrote the United States Constitution. Why would my people be so wise, so intelligent to write a and the United States is one of the greatest documents, the Constitution. It's a great document. But why would my people write a document so great as the United States Constitution and write themselves in it as slaves in the very first article? As three-fifths all of a person. Come on, do that sound like wisdom to you?
No.
Because it didn't happen. No more than Clarence Thomas wrote it. is he a boulet too? I thought it was Jesse Jackson and same thing, huh? Oh, okay. All right. It doesn't matter All right? You must free yourself from here. Only the truth can do that. All right? Only the truth can make you free. It's up to you to accept it. Now, you can play mind games with yourself all you want to. I can't help that. Okay? Because some of you think you got time to play games and jerk your mind around and masturbate your society away. It's, you don't have it like that no more. Okay? Why not? Do you know that here in the United States right now, they got over 800 concentration camps? Most of them are ex-military bases and compounds and things. That's been, they're fully manned and operating right now. 800 of them. Over 800. Okay? FEMA. Sound familiar? FEMA?
Yep.
Couldn't find them when Katrina hit.
That's right. That's right.
Okay? Then again, you couldn't find Morocco either. Where was Morocco at?
Yeah. Good point.
Castro even offered to help.
Yep.
No, no. They want, why? Because your property. You belong to another man. You belong to another government. And it's up to that government to make a determination whether they want anybody else in here to help you or not. Okay? All this stuff about, I heard some people say about a nation within a nation. Ain't no such thing as a nation within a nation, unless one of them is a punk.
Look.
Now, I'm almost 7 years old. My wife told me that, you know, they got to watch me because they don't know what I'm going to say out my mouth next. It might come with age. I don't know. But all I do know is that there is no more time to be playing games with my people.
That's right.
Okay. Freedom is business. Okay? It's your business. No one can free you but you. Okay? It's not a violation to do the things that you naturally supposed to do. A fish would do that. You don't believe me? Put a hook in his mouth and see what he do. I don't know how many fishermen in here, but they fight hard, man, to try to get back to that freedom. Okay? That's the one movement you have never heard about. You've heard civil rights movement, all kinds of rights movement, but you ain't hear nobody talking about except Kunta Kinte and give us free. And he went on back to Africa.
That's a movement.
Okay? That was a Supreme Court decision. Okay? He went on back to Africa. Amistad. Okay? Why? Because certain laws apply to free people that do not apply to property. Okay? This is what my people got to wake up to. All right? When we use the word jurisdiction, it's two things that operate in all courts of law the world over. One is status, and the other one is jurisdiction.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you all got that little part. We're going to go to the next thing on the docket, which is truth. Love, truth, peace, freedom, and justice. Truth. What kind of truth should Moors be concerned about? The Moors should be concerned about truth that involves their story, their culture, their ancient story. And when you begin to investigate that and invest time in researching that and studying that and learning that, that is what you want to have in your brain so that that is what will come out. Because everybody on the planet does that. That's what we all do. That's what we need to do. The day for Negro, colors, black, African Americans, Afro Americans, and all of that is over. You can forget about trying to set up anything beneficial that you create and you control and call all the shots over as a Negro, as a nationalist people. You can forget about that. You have a nationality. For those of you who are concerned about their nationality and who would need to learn more about that, I encourage you to go to www.moorishamericangov.org, and there's tons of information in there that you can study about your government and stuff. But you also want to do research on your own culture. Everything involving your ancient culture is what you want, because if you cannot hope to do anything or sway anybody toward listening to you about anything if you are not talking to them from a position of strength and power. Me personally, I can't understand how someone would do it any other way. I can only speak from my worldview, and that's the worldview that I'm supposed to speak from. That does not make me narrow-minded. I have plenty of sense to know about a whole lot of things. I'm not multicultural, you see. I have a culture, I have a story, and I'm proud to be born who I am and what I am and to live in this day and age. So when it comes to truth, that's the truth you want to investigate first. After you get that down and clearly understood and have enough information on that where you can speak about that from every conceivable angle at any given point in time in history, now we're ready to begin to learn about somebody else. That is the truth. You want to deal with law, okay, and then you want to study everything that you need to use in this society, inside the United States, about law. You want to learn that. You want to be able to use it. But what supersedes that and precedes that is knowledge of self, knowledge of your culture, your ancient story, because that is a reservoir, a rich, rich reservoir that you can draw from. Now, we have a lot of people inside the country and in schools and colleges and universities. They have a whole lot of information. When you ask them to tell you who they are, they cannot tell you. If you ask them to tell you who Musa Khan Musa was, they can't tell you. They can't tell you anything about Timbuktu. Because by some unknown crook or reason, we seem to believe that that is something that we don't need. We're going to make it as a disconnected plant from our culture and story. And we steady looking at all other races on the planet in the face who are connected to their culture and story and is respected by the world, but we can't figure it out. It ain't hard to figure out. All you got to do is reconnect. Reconnect. That's the starting point. That's the truth you want to start working with. Finding out who you are. That's the first thing you're supposed to know, who you are. And that's the last thing any college or university inside the United States is going to teach you, even in elementary school. Oh, no, keep that away from them. Don't let them know that, because if they get that, then they will have power. Then they will have pride, which breeds power. They will have knowledge of self, and there's nothing we can do with them then if they get that. So we have to remove that from the school system, and we have to start teaching you about algebra and science and math and Europe and everything but you. There's a reason why that is. There's a reason why you're being taught these things and not what you're supposed to be taught. The horse is removed from the cart the first day you go to the first grade. Ain't no horse in front of that cart. You're going to learn about any and everything, but you ain't going to learn the most important thing you're supposed to learn. You cannot build a house without a foundation. But they want you to believe that you're building a house, but you don't have no foundation. And everything's going to be all right. It's not going to be all right. And we have proof, because we got millions of people of African descent inside the United States, and the nation is in shambles. We got brothers and sisters running up and down football fields and basketball courts, making thousands of dollars, and don't know jack about nothing by their own culture, their own story, and have done any investigation. You might have a few that have done some things, but they don't understand, take their wealth and invest in their nation and try to set up anything where they can begin to act collectively. You're talking about building your, taking your neighborhoods and transforming them into communities. You're going to have power. All the people in the neighborhood that you're trying to transform into a community is going to have the same power. You're going to have to be on one page. Everybody's going to have knowledge. You're going to have a knowledge base. And so I've created a knowledge base for you. And there's tons of information in there. We put new information in every week. This is my contribution to my people because of love, truth, peace, freedom, and justice. And this is what I'm doing. But I'm encouraging you all to do the same thing. Now let's go on to the word peace. Okay, now, that's a very, very interesting thing, peace. How do we have peace in a chaotic world? Well, you want to have the love, you want to have the truth, and you want to exercise and get in touch with your spiritual side. You cannot be afraid to communicate with your Creator. You talk to Him, tell Him what you want. Ask Him for peace. Ask Him for protection. Ask Him for guidance. And you can live a peaceful life. I live a peaceful life. I have specialized skills and training and all kind of stuff. I can, you know, act up if I want to, but I don't choose to do that because I'm much too busy doing what I think is a worthwhile and noble effort, and that is to do something about aiding my people nationwide, and that's what I do. I do that every single day, and sometimes I talk to my Creator, and I ask for peace, and I ask for guidance. I don't have to ask for peace. I already got that, but I do ask for guidance and wisdom and instruction, and so that's how you go about getting peace. But these principles, love, truth, peace, freedom, and justice, they all go hand in hand. We need to have them all hand in hand in order to be whole. One other thing about peace, you want to promote peace. You want to always communicate with your brother so that he can understand that the overall objective is to maintain and get in a position so that we can have peace. See, because if you might have $100,000 in chaos, but there's no peace. That's no way to live. To me, that ain't living. That just simply ain't living. But when you got peace, you got people who don't have nothing, but they got peace. Got peace of mind. So peace is extremely important, and it comes also with study and research and getting in touch with your spiritual side. And actually physically taking action to the point where you can have peace. Now, I may mention the fact many, many times that I do not have, I do not watch TV, you know, I just don't. You know, I got them in here, but I don't. I don't want certain images and concepts and information in my brain. I want to be the one to control what goes in and what comes out. I meet a lot of brothers on Facebook. A lot of times they'll send me a message, "Hey, Talker, what you doing, man? Let's play so-and-so game." And I tell them, I said, "Brother, I'm sorry I don't play any games, and I don't even watch TV. So you might get somebody else to do that because I'm busy working because I got a job to do every single day, and this is what I do. And I enjoy what I do. Because I hear from my brothers and sisters all over the United States. They tell me that I certainly appreciate you guiding me into the archives and supporting me and helping me and teaching me. So now I'm able to do a whole lot of things. You know, I thank you. And that makes me feel good. That let me know that I'm doing something to affect my nation, something to aid my people. I have self-love, love my people, they come first. So this is my effort to aid and help them. Okay? So now we're going to go take a little quick break, and when we come back, then we will go in into the next phase of the broadcast.
Be sure to subscribe to NBTV at NBTV1.com.
Welcome once again to another edition of the Truth Hour. My name is Johnny Guzman. As always, a pleasure to be here sharing truth with you. Tonight, a very special program. We have an all-star lineup tonight. Breaking news, as most of you know, tonight there was a guilty verdict, and we're going to have Mr. Kevin Annette here with us, who is going to explain exactly what went on today in this decision that is so crucial for humanity. And, of course, we're going to have Kate of Gaia and Tony C. from Synchronicity.com. They will be here. As always, they join us each and every Monday. And, of course, a special guest as well, our good friend from Australia, Santos Bonacci from BonacciTheFilm.com. He will be here with us in just a few minutes as well to hear this fantastic story that the system, the Pope and the Crown are coming down. Very well. Let's say hello to our friends. Tony, how are you, my friend?
Not too bad, Johnny. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fantastic. Tonight we have a great show. And, of course, after this breaking news, this guilty verdict that we're going to speak to Kevin, you guys have some interesting information as well that you want to share with us in just a few minutes. Let's say hello, hello to Santos. Santos, where are you?
Hello, how are you, Johnny?
Okay, Santos.
Very well.
And tonight we have a fantastic program. We're going to get your input as well on what's going on this verdict that the Vatican and the Pope and the Queen and I believe the Prime Minister of Canada are all going to jail. And we're going to get your input as well on that. Kate, my friend, how are you?
Good, Johnny. How are you doing? Sorry, I was muted, so it takes a second to react. There you
okay.
go. Yeah, doing really good. Should be a very informative show tonight. Absolutely.
Fantastic. And, of course, you and Tony have some interesting news to share from your other radio show that you guys did. Someone, I believe, called in and shared some very interesting information, and I'm sure that our fans are just going to enjoy to hear that breaking news as well. And, of course,
oh, yeah.
we have the man of the hour, Kevin Annette. How are you, Kevin?
I'm fine. Thanks a lot for having me.
And of course, Kevin, thank you again for being here tonight, and thank you for bringing this justice to the world. So why don't we start with you, Kevin? Tell us, please, about this so important news that you brought to us today. Now, I was very important to have you on because our Spanish community, I was posting this all over the Facebook and all over the social networks, and they were thinking it was a joke. This was a joke. You know, it's just one of those other things to grab attention and so forth. And it got me kind of mad a little bit because I know this is not a joke. So a lot of people have heard this news, but I think there's still some doubt. And they're saying, well, you know, they brought George Bush to some criminal charges on him and Dick Cheney, but nothing ever happened. So please explain to our audience what went on in this verdict that was given today on Monday. Kevin.
Thank you. Well, first of all, it's not a symbolic decision at all. It has the standing of international law and common law behind it. In any legal system around the world, when the government, the courts, are not protecting the community, it's a long custom for people to take action to protect their communities. This is simply what we're doing. We also have standing under international law that has already found these institutions, violating the Convention on Genocide in the case of the Canadian residential schools and other things. So it's not so much that what we're doing is inappropriate, or illegitimate. It's that nobody's had the will up till now to confront these big institutions. What we found over the last little while after the verdict came out, we have had over 300,000 hits around the world on our website. We've had the Italian media going ballistic over the story. We've even had the cardinal in England resigning and saying he's not coming to the conclave to elect the Pope, which is unbelievable for a cardinal to make a statement. So I think we're seeing what happened 500 years ago when the Reformation came along. We're seeing the disintegration of this institution.
Kevin, what is the next step? I mean, you mentioned in your announcement that the Pope, the Queen, and I believe the Prime Minister of Canada have until the 4th of March. Is this correct? I mean, what is that? Tell us, please.
Well, the guilty verdict that came out today was accompanied with a sentencing that said that they have 1 week to respond. They had three opportunities to present a defense, and they declined from even challenging the charges made against them or offering counter evidence, which is a statement in itself that they wouldn't defend their own reputation like that. But they have a week to respond, and after that, the court in Brussels plans to issue international citizens arrest warrants and seek hearings in courts in Europe in various countries to enter the evidence and get them to issue arrest warrants within their territories as well for these criminals. If the Prime Minister of Canada ever came to a particular country, he'd be arrested under international law. Now, the important thing, you know, people have often said, well, how are you going to arrest the Pope? This is kind of like when the Minutemen took a shot at the British Army in 1775. It was called a shot heard round the world. The Minutemen didn't defeat the British Empire, but they were the catalyst that activated people to the whole nation to rise up. And this is very similar to what we're doing. We're a catalyst hoping that this example will be copied, citizens will protect their own communities and their children. And, we have every indication that this is what this tidal wave is building.
Okay, so these orders will go out to for the citizens to that they have the authority to arrest the Pope, the Queen, Kevin? Is this correct?
Well, absolutely. These people have conducted a criminal conspiracy. In the Vatican, it's called a law called crimen solicitanus. Every priest and bishop in the Catholic Church in the world has to cover up child rape and protect child rapists, or they'll be excommunicated. That's a Vatican directive. It's been in policy since 1962. Now, that's a criminal conspiracy going on. Since the police are doing nothing about it, it's up to the citizens to do that. That's our customary right, first of all. Queen Elizabeth has beheaded a criminal conspiracy that killed over 50,000 children in Indian boarding schools across Canada. You know, that death rate, all of that is posted at hiddennolonger.com, all the hard evidence, and at itccs.org. You go to the November 6th and January 30th postings, all of that hard evidence is up online. So, yes, we have a very strong basis morally and legally to take this action.
Okay. Santos, let's get a quick question for you. What does this mean now for you, Santos, to hear this announcement that Kevin has given us today, Santos?
Well, I'm very excited because by my part, I've presented many evidences against the Vatican and the crimes that it's committed. The pages of history are full of evidence. There's no doubt about it. This is a monstrous, blood-letting, killing machine of megalithic proportions. Never has anything like this ever been seen, you know, in the universe, really. So how else was it going to end? I mean, it wasn't going to end in a nice way. Thank you for your business, humanity. Sorry to have killed a couple of billion of you because you didn't believe what we were teaching. Sorry, all you 300 million indigenous American Indians. We decapitated your culture, stole all your books, hoarded them in the Vatican. Of course it's got to finish this way. Of course it has to finish where we take it upon ourselves to see the end of Goliath. Because remember, King David was looking around, he was going, is anyone going to try this Goliath? He is taunting the battlefields of Israel, and no one is going to challenge him. So he raced off and picked up five stones and did it himself. You know, with one stone. So as Kevin said, it doesn't look like the police or the army are doing anything at the moment. They will, but they've been paid. You see, they've been paid by the banks to protect the criminals. So it will be inevitably up to us. And it's a joy to see because Kevin and Kevin's organization have provided something for us finally that we can stand behind and support. We can give our support to it. I give my 100% support to it. So, and I know many, many other hundreds of thousands of people do too, because never before have these authorities been challenged like this in such a way, in a legal, proper way, lawful, peaceful, the proper way.
Okay. Kevin, but explain, Santos just said this is the legal, proper way. So there's a lot of people, Kevin, you there?
Yes, I'm here, yeah.
How can you explain to the folks that may not understand how this is legal? Because the thing is, like, they'll say, well, they never showed up to court. You can't accuse someone of being guilty if they never showed up to court to defend themselves. You know, so...
Well, actually...
Go ahead.
You can. If they don't respond under customary law, silence means consent. It means they're not challenging what's being said against them. So by their silence, they've agreed with what we've charged them under any, you know, common law system. Also, it was legal for the Nazis to kill millions of people. It was legal for George Bush to order the slaughter of people in Iraq. This is not about legality, it's about lawfulness. Laws are passed by governments and churches to justify their killing and their slaughter, but they're not lawful. And what we're doing here is lawful in the sense that we need a new legal system to judge institutions that committed crimes against humanity. They did it after World War II. They created a new legal concept, crimes against humanity and international law. We're standing on that tradition. And frankly, the Vatican and these governments are in the same position the Nazis were after World War II. And they're actually making the same argument.
Out of the Western Sudan would come a great general, Tarak Ben Zad, a Jabiral Tarak. He would discover a weakness in Spain, fighting the Goths and the Visigoths, and the Vandals fighting among themselves. The dissident element in Spain would do something white people rarely ever do. They would sneak across into Africa and tell the Africans how weak the whites are, and said they are so weak, if you want to conquer them, easy thing to do. Jabiral would send a testing army by 10,000 just to test their minds. You find it is easy. Then later, he would send 60,000 You take Spain. Now, this is purely an African conquest. You're not dealing with the Arab conquest of Spain at first, because the Arabs were not there at first. The initial conquest of Spain was African, not Arab. That army came from the Senegambia, now Senegal, and parts of what is now Mauritania. And when they moved over and conquered Spain, Madame Bagheba has written a book on it that bears a name, Tarek Ben Zayed. The Rock of Gibraltar is named after him. It's the hill or the mountain of Tarek. Gibraltar is a corruption of his name, Jabral. And she describes the army going into Spain. She says the army was black as ink. The general was blacker still. Meaning the general was the only one riding a white horse. So his blackness against that whiteness looked blacker than the rest of them. But the horse was better dressed than the kings of Europe, with silk and brocade.
Islamic armies, their ranks dominated by African converts, defeat the Romans and push on to the continent of Europe. In the process, they capture Spain. There, the Africans and Arabs create a rich, cultured, and powerful empire. So powerful, it endures for 500 years.
The achievement of the Arabs at this time is they have driven the Europeans out of the Mediterranean. The European now must go back into Europe. They have no empires, no great connections outside of Europe. And because of this, they ultimately would go into a period called the Dark Ages. Militarily, the Africans took over Spain, and militarily, the Africans,
the Garmantes of the Sahara, who became very powerful. In fact, the Romans found they could not defeat them. They had chariots and their javelin throwers, etc. They became a very powerful, sophisticated people, as far as farming and then building cities, etc. Those were largely the black Moors. However, there came another type, Libyans, etc., people who had come into the Sahara. Fair-skinned Libyans who's mixed with black types. So you have both the mixed or tawny Moors and you have the blacker Moors. Into this came the Arabians, some of them fair-skinned, some of them dark, some of them becoming dark through intermixing with the women of the Garamantes and the other African people. So it was a very mixed bunch. But when they attacked Spain in 711 AD, out of 7,000 troops, 6,000 were black Africans. Now, why did they attack Europe in the first place? Now, the Moors were intent, the Muslims were intent on conquering as much of the world as they could in order to bring their religion into the world, just as the Christians earlier in the Crusades had tried to conquer as much of the world as they could in order to bring Christianity to various people. Well, the Muslims advanced in various places.
Their thing was, accept Islam or die. There's only one way. There's only one God, Allah, and if you don't accept that, there ain't nothing. Is it? But the African, once he got hold of Islam, he did what he does with every other religion. What's that? You see how I can apply it to the situation. That's it. Okay, I didn't mean to get all off up into that. Let me come back now. Hikupatah, house of the god, Ptah. And that's a Greek term. That's what the Greeks call.
Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those that trespass against us. Although them again we will never, never, never trust. Them don't know what them do. They go to yai while I'm sticking like glue. Blinking green while I'm plotting for you.
Arena mock civilization
now think they brought civilization. Now, it is part of a war over and above Professor Lesterwick's book and over and above her political naivete. Her naivete is about what is happening in the Western world. There was a recent book called The Tribes. It diagrams every people, major people on the earth, searching for a piece of turf for themselves. It left out the African people because the other people, including Asian imperialists, have plans to take over Africa. There have been several articles in the New York Times advocating the recolonization of Africa. This book and other literature of this nature need to prepare the world to accept a rationalization for the re-enslavement of Africa. Now, and when you deal with professional white behind kissers, and as Carlos Cook, disgrace to the skin they wear. These people, if I'm being so kind to call them that, are running from themselves and teaching us a lesson that we should have learned long ago. Sometimes white wannabes are more dangerous than whites. And sometimes they'll fight you harder to be accepted by whites. They are running from their own people.
2 minutes.
And running from definition. Now, what we need to look at now is how Professor Lesterwood neglected the white writers through history, the radical European writers who wrote positively of Africa and who identified the relationship of Africa to the ancient Greeks. Now, if given time, and I probably won't be given it this evening, I can prove to you with your satisfaction, if you are listening, that Rome and Greece was not European creations. These were Mediterranean-inspired nations and couldn't be created by Europe because at the time there was no Europe.
Homework.
You'll have to leave it there. We'll have to leave it there for the moment.
All right.
Thank you very much. I now ask Professor Lefkowitz to present her 5-minute conclusion.
Can you hear me? Maybe you don't want to hear me. Let me just begin by saying what my book, Not Out of Africa, isn't about. It's not an attack on Afrocentrism. If Afrocentrism means recognition of African achievements in the world, it doesn't seek to deprive Africans of their rightful heritage. Africans do not need Greece to have a cultural heritage. They have a rich cultural heritage. Egypt is just one part of it. They don't need Greece. I'm concerned because what is being offered in some quarters as African history is really a European myth. And thus, instead of getting real information about Africa, what people are learning is something that's really 18th century French. It's Eurocentric, it's based on Greek and Roman myths. I do not myself think that one should do that because Egypt itself is so fascinating, so rich. There is so much that you can learn and know, and that I myself, as a result of all this work that we have been doing for the last 4 years and more, have come to know and understand about Egypt, I would like to now spend a great deal of the rest of the time that I have learning about that, because it is so different. It's so different from what the Greeks thought that it was. Herodotus was very impressed by Egypt. He wanted to say that everything in Greece that he could think of came or had some connection with Egypt. He didn't really understand the depth and richness of Egypt, which went in directions way beyond what he knew from his own experience in Greece. So I am concerned about that in Not Out of Africa. I try to explain why the notion of an Egyptian mystery system, which is basically a French invention, it's based on a novel that everyone has forgotten about, but still you can find in some very obscure libraries, get it up in Boston even, and that book, which was by a French priest, is based on Greek and Roman sources and tries to describe a Greco-Roman Egypt, and that this myth was preserved in Freemasonry and thus came into American culture. So I'm concerned that that myth not be taught, the notion that there was an Egyptian mystery system. Instead, I'd like to see people learn, all people learn, not just black people, white people, any people, learn about Africa and the civilizations therein. And Egypt is particularly appealing because it's so old, it's so impressive, its role in the Mediterranean was so vast, and so many other civilizations were touched by it. Even if only slightly, they did get touched by it, and we have to work on that. I would like to say, just in my last 2 minutes, that from my point of view and the point of view of my colleague Guy Rogers, the ancient world is multicultural, and that one cannot study any one bit of it without studying every other bit of it. And the debate tonight, and I hope the debate will go on for many, many years because so many of us will learn from it, that debate should investigate the degree and extent of those links. Myself, as I think you know, I don't think the Greek philosophy was stolen from Egypt. I do not believe there is any evidence to show that. I think that because Egyptian philosophy, and there is such a thing as Egyptian philosophy and deep Egyptian religious thought, which is very, very complicated, and I myself need to know more about it still. But it's not like the Greeks. It may in many ways be richer and better than some of the concept.
Well, you'll have to leave it right there for the moment. I would like Professor Bernal to conclude in 5 minutes or less.
Well, can people hear me?
Yeah.
Yep. I agree with Professor Lefkowitz that Africa does not need Greece. There are plenty of glorious African civilizations. It's just that it happens to have Greece, or to have influenced Greece, to a significant thing. This is not an issue of politics, it's an issue of history, the way things were. Now, Greece is extremely important because it is the single greatest source of European culture, and therefore we are concerned with it. And it is very interesting to note that European culture did not begin in Germany or Sweden, but at the extreme southeast corner of Europe, and the reason for that is quite straightforward. It was the closest area to the great civilizations of northeastern Africa and southwest Asia, and this East Mediterranean complex was the source of Greek and hence, I believe, European culture. Now, that's not to deny that there was a great deal of local development within Greece, and I certainly do not propose that Greek culture was merely a projection or an imitation of Egyptian or Semitic culture. It's clearly a very distinctive culture. But to try and understand Greek culture without knowing the background of the ancient cultures behind it would be as absurd as it would be to study Japanese culture without knowing the Chinese and Korean roots behind it. And no East Asian specialist would dream of doing that. That you have to see the cultures as interrelated, and that the older cultures and the more elaborate cultures had the predominant cultural influence. One of our basic disagreements is that Mary Lefkowitz sitting in the 20th century, feels that she knows better than the Greek historians of the 5th and 4th and 3rd century when they said that there were significant influences. Yes, he was very impressed. Yes, he was very Greek. But what struck him were specific similarities, and Herodotus, a rather plodding historian, he said, well, what's the reason for these similarities? I think they're too close for coincidence. I don't think the Egyptians could have borrowed them from the Greeks because they've had them so long. Therefore, the most likely explanation is that the Greeks took them from the Egyptians. And this is what I call the ancient model. And this model was not overthrown.
John Henry Clark is a hero to many in several black communities, an intellectual hero. Professor Clark headed the African and Puerto Rican Studies Department at Hunter College. He has lectured widely on the black condition and experience in the United States, the Caribbean, and Africa. He lives quietly in Harlem in a brownstone house in which he has a collection of over 20,000 books on just about every dimension of black people's experience imaginable. Likett has spent the better part of a day with Professor Clark recently. This edition will share the fruits of that visit with you in just a moment.
Well, I was born in Union Springs, Alabama, a farm town.
What year?
1915. And I grew up in a mill town called Columbus, Georgia, near Fort Benning, the big army post.
Tell me about your folks, your parents and your family.
Well, my parents were sharecroppers. That's a term a lot of people have lost the meaning of. A sharecropper is a landless peasant. They farm other people's land and get a share of the crop. Generally, the landowner keeps the books, and they nearly always get cheated. And he manipulates the books in such a way that at the end of the year, you always have to work another year to pay off the debt from the previous year. Finally, nature interceded in our case, and during a storm, the wind blew the roof off of our house and wrecked our farm. And my father picked up his brew and moved to Columbus, Georgia, with the hope of earning enough money to come back to Union Springs and buy land and be an independent farmer. It was the dream of his life. It was a dream he never realized.
What happened?
Well, he worked in mills. He worked in brickyards. He worked himself literally to death. And thanks to a 10 cents a week policy, he was buried in free land. The length of his body from head to feet, 6 feet under the ground. The grave we buried him in was the only free land he ever knew.
What kind of a man was your father?
He was a semi-illiterate man with great hopes and dreams for his children. And he worked toward those hopes and dreams. His greatest hope for me was that I would eventually be the owner of a corner grocery store after I had rejected the idea of being a farmer. Then when I told him I wanted to come to New York, I wanted to come someplace, I wanted to leave the South, and I wanted to be a writer, he never understood what it meant to be a writer. It was a strange thing to him. Because among his children, I learned to read early. I learned to read for a rather selfish reason. I wanted to teach the junior class in the local Baptist church, Gethsemane Baptist Church. I wanted to teach Sunday school So I learned to read not from books, but from signboards and throwaway ads.
You taught yourself?
Yes. I was teaching myself from the beginning, mostly from things that were discarded. And when I grew up, I was working in the homes of rich white people or semi-rich white people and delivering clothes because my mother was a washerwoman, my natural mother before she passed. And
how old were you when she passed?
Oh, I must have been about, must have been about eight. She passed in 22 or 3.
Oh.
Must have been about 8. I was already learning to read and...
Well, what about school? Didn't you go to school?
I went to school intermittently and didn't go to school on a regular basis until after she passed. We were sent back to Union Springs, Alabama, where I lived with my great-grandmother and my grand-aunt on a farm. His father, my grandfather Jonah, my great-grandmother Mary, and he would visit sometime. And there was time I saw three generations of our family in one room at the same time.
They're all from Alabama?
Alabama, except that my grandmother, Mary, said that she came from a farm in Georgia originally. And every time we would meet, she would tell the story of her husband, Buck. She had three children by Buck. And Buck was sold to a slave breeding farm in Virginia. This is something we don't talk about. Slave breeding farm.
What's that?
These were farms that they bred slaves like they bred horses, because he was handsome and tall, and they just like they take a thoroughbred horse to breed another thoroughbred. They took human beings to breed other human beings. So he was sold to a slave breeding farm in Virginia.
Do you know where in Virginia this was?
Well, she didn't know either. So after emancipation, she spent 3 years in Virginia looking for him.
Yeah.
And she never found him. And every time the family gathered, she would tell that same story as though we had never heard it before. And then she would turn to my grandfather, Jonah, and she would say the same thing over again. Jonah, that was your father. That was my grandfather, my father's father, she was talking to. Mm-hmm. This is what I mean, is that very often I would see when my father visited the farm after my mother died, I would see three generations sometime coming together. My father and his people, my grandfather and his people, and my great-grandmother, Mary. And she would tell us the story because my great-grandmother, Mary, that we call Ma Mary, she witnessed the last slaves who came over directly from Africa.
Did she ever tell that story?
She told very often.
What did she say about that?
These stories of those slaves.
What did she have to say? What did she see?
And she told these slaves who, she said, spoke in grunts instead of languages. She could not understand their language. They had not adjusted to the English language.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back. We're going to the next one, which is freedom. And freedom is tied in to love, truth, and peace. Freedom for you comes, once again, when you rely on the truth and you have peace. And all connected to knowledge of yourself. It all is internally. You get it internally from you. First, you have to be free. You have to free your mind. what we call your brain. And once you do that, then everything else will follow. That's where freedom initially comes from. Now, we've had two previous broadcasts on survival, and I've told you that you have to get your survival skills and stuff in order and all this stuff. And but that's in the physical realm, and learning how to take care of yourself, and learning how to feed your family, and protect and provide for yourself and your family. All that moves you over into the arena of freedom. You've replaced fear with skill, and that is what gives you freedom. You have a freedom inside. You don't have any fear inhibiting you. Once you concentrate on doing the exercising these principles and using them to maneuver you in a position of freedom, you will truly be free. And then everything else you can start dealing with externally. But your freedom begins right there in your own brain. Okay? And that is where it starts. And we've been given a whole lot of information about freedom. And most of what we've been given about freedom is always externally. But I'm here to tell you, your freedom begins internally first. You don't have a God outside yourself. It's within you. And when you begin to deal with what's within and talk to your God and to exercise your love and peace and get things in perspective, then you move toward truly being free. Now, that's not to say that external freedom is not valuable. It is. But what I'm trying to tell you is the starting point for freedom is within you. You've heard the expression all the time. Free your mind and you know what will follow. That's true. That's where you start. You start right there with your freedom. Okay? And that is what I want to say.
jurisdiction is the power that the court has to pry into the facts and make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Like you have the jurisdiction over your children. Now, I'm going to take that back.
No, you don't.
Do you know you don't have jurisdiction over your children? Mm-hmm. And especially brothers.
Mm-hmm.
I know you said I'm pretty hard on you, but we are the only powerless men on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Powerless. In order to be a man, you got to have free natural standards, you got to have free natural principles, and you must have power to be a man. Somebody been messing with you. Fake you right out. I'm a man. That ain't what I say. I'm a grown ass man. It sounds for me.
Yeah. That's the word, man.
It sounds good when you put it in music with Tupac and they'll know it.
Yeah.
Okay? But in reality, let a sister take you downtown. Did I say downtown?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Take you to George Washington.
Uh-oh.
Oh, y'all thought George Washington was dead?
No. In the courthouse.
I've seen them pretty buildings. Portland got some pretty jail buildings downtown.
Woo! Sweet. Upstairs.
It took me right out on that. That's a jail? I mean, I know the more I said that, I know it's big business, but come on now. That looks like a mall. Big plate glass windows downstairs. Who knew? Okay. Y'all didn't know crime pays in America. We got over 13 million single moms. You can't have a nation of people like that. There's something wrong with that picture. How did it get that way? Okay? You got over 3 million brothers locked up. Okay? Another 6 million on paper. Better not do it no more. Okay, you know what that means? That's what they have in a credit report gone bad. Okay? It is, because you can't grow, you can't move. Why? Because you're a felon.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody put a stamp on you to say, hey, you don't go no farther.
That's right.
Okay? You're being gauged by their owners.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Demonstrate.
We're here to give you your freedom back.
Mm-hmm.
But freedom rests with all freedom, and this is the work of the great creator. He put the freedom of every living thing into its memory. Okay? Black people ain't got no memory of ever being free, because black people ain't never been free. Negroes never been free. Okay? African Americans, they never been free. They was made right here in America. Come on now. They didn't come out of Africa.
That's right.
Africa had nations and nationalities.
That's right.
Little places like Ghana, Sudan, and things, okay? That don't sound like no black land to me. We have a little game that we play called Out of the Pot. And we do this with most of the audiences, you know, and where that we ask for willing participation, you know, from the audience, and we ask you to make a stand when we call you. We give you a status first, or that lack thereof, you know, if you are German, we ask you to stand, and then we ask if you are any kind of Sudanese, you know, whatever, Irish. Then we ask for a real strong black man to stand up, and, you know, a colored woman or something, you know, an African-American. The trick comes in here, because then we say, all right, now the seat that you were sitting in, it also bears the name of your country. But your name, your free national name, also matches the name of your chair. So you have a seat. So German, the dude whoever the German is, his chair should be called what?
Germany.
Germany. He can have a seat. Okay? The Sudanese should have a chair called what?
Sudan.
Sudan. Have a seat. Where the black person gonna say that? Blackness. Oh, I got a good one. What about the Afro, the African American? That's a good one. Mm-hmm. What? Well, what's the matter?
Oh,
it ain't no country. These are continents. Ain't neither continent got no flag. This is the flag of the United States, not America. They call it the American flag. We know better. Okay? Africa don't have no flag. You got 56 countries in Africa. Which one is yours? Take your choice. But you're going to call yourself an African American. Right. You ain't got no chair to sit in either. Okay? So the name game, the status game has been played. Okay? Who has jurisdiction over all black people? The one that made us. If you got a dog, as long as that dog is in your yard, on your chain, eating your food, you can call it what you want to. Mm-hmm. Butch, Spot, Negro, Black person, it don't matter. That's your dog. I know that I got a little southern accent too, but don't bear with me. Okay? But that's still your dog. They, you know what? They even say they call each other that. My dog. That's sad. And we like it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm your dog. Okay? Something wrong with that picture. All right? So when somebody knocked you in the head and put you in this shallow grave, what does the shallow grave look like today? Because I go to church. Don't get me messed up. I ain't in no shallow grave, Lord's sake.
That's right. What?
No. So what does the shallow grave look like today? It looked like the 14th Amendment. Let me tell you what happened. Because I like laws, all right? You have been enslaved by the laws of the United States and didn't even know it. All right? The United States abolished slavery in 1865 with the 13th Amendment. Remember that?
Yeah.
1865, they completely abolished. It didn't free nobody. It just abolished the system of slavery that held you down. Mm-hmm. There's a difference. Because if you remember, 2 years earlier, President Lincoln wrote the Emancipation Proclamation. Didn't free nobody. Okay? All they did was, because he was at war. Okay? So by him being the president, it was another title. The chief of what?
The executive
chief of military. That's the president's station, right? Yeah. So under that auspices, he wrote the Emancipation Proclamation against his enemy. Because the strength of his enemy was slavery, which was the South, right? Mm-hmm. So he wrote the Emancipation Proclamation, say, well, free them all. That take away some of the strength from his enemy, and the rest is history. 2 years later, Congress, which is the only Congress can act on a nation of people anyway, Congress wrote the 13th Amendment and abolished slavery. Okay? Oh, did you know that in 1861, another thing, the Southern Confederate United States, whose headquarters in Richmond, Virginia, they abolished slavery 2 years before the United States did? Yeah. Check the record. Okay? Anyway, 1865, the United States Congress abolished slavery. Okay? But 3 years later, because you have been hit in the head so hard, see what happened? See that flag over there? No, this the white one. Okay? Yeah. It says, the great seal of the Morris American nation since 1865 AD, okay? If when they wrote the United, when they abolished slavery, that's when we became a nation of people. You couldn't become a nation of people prior to the advent of the dissolution of slavery. Make sense?
Islam. Mm-hmm.
Okay? When slavery ended, we became a people, but then nobody tell us.
That's right.
Okay, right. We was hitting the head so hard, we thought I was free. They abolished slavery, so I was free. That was it. You're free what? I was a free Negro. I ain't on the plantation no more, so I'm a free Negro. Okay, but 3 years later, the same Masons got together. Okay, did you also know Let me tell you about those brothers who think y'all are Freemasons. How come y'all didn't produce the KKK? That came out the large too, you know. To scare Negroes.
That's right.
And they went wild from 1865 until 1965. 100 years, the United States turned them loose on you. Mm. That's where the picnic come from. Pick a nigga and kill it.
Demonstrate.
Okay? All right? So what we're talking about in 1868, 3 years later, the United States Congress, because you must remember the Civil War was a terrible battle between two brothers. Okay? They called it North and the South. Well, we know what it is, the blue and the gray. But it was actually brothers, though. Remember, one was a Confederate, one was a Union. They're still two brothers of the same what? Lodge. Because you must remember, a Mason is a person who got power. Have you ever seen a Negro Mason with power?
No.
No more than to snitch. That's all he did. That's what the Prince Hall was used for, a snitch. I know y'all mad at me again. Will y'all leave out of here, boy? Okay, but see, I need to give you this so you'll know what they're working with before you get too mad at me. Okay? So what they did in 1868, Congress wrote the 14th Amendment, and see if this sounds familiar to you. 14th Amendment, United States Congress, 1868. 3 years after they abolished the slavery with the 13th Amendment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All persons, that's a master word, all persons born or naturalized, right, and subject to the jurisdiction are hereby citizens. And we took that and ran with it. Mm-hmm. Boogity, 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 boogity. I said all persons, but when you look up the word person as described and used in the 14th Amendment, it means commercial property.
Demonstrate.
The same thing that it means in the Moroccan Treaty between George Washington and Muhammad, with right back where I started from. That treaty was about commercial property. Now, what was the greatest commerce? Y'all want know? You know about business, commerce. What was the greatest commercial thing going on in 1786, where the treaty was written between Morocco and the United States?
Slave trade.
The West African slave trade. And your leader in Morocco, Muhammad, bless his Arab loving heart, turned his back on you and sold us into slavery. Okay, and he continued it because he wrote a treaty with George Washington. Did you know that George Washington and his wife Martha owned 400 more of us while he was in Philadelphia, the first president in office? Yeah, they had 400 slaves that he was the president. Because why? For a Western Freemason, listen to this, you Mason brothers, okay? A Western Freemason and slave master, these two terms are synonymous with each other.
Mm-hmm.
It was a matter of prestige to own a slave and be a Mason. Now, how many Masons have the slaves that you know, the Masons that you know, how many slaves they own? Including their own, yes. I'm waiting. Okay. Now we got that resolved. All right. The word person in the 14th Amendment means commercial property. Look it up. Okay. So now let's see how it reads on your birth certificate. All persons born, all property born. Let's look at your birth certificate. Look at it real good. Do it have the state of Oregon seal on it? Does it have the state seal on the state that you was born? Huh? That's a smoking gun. Because the only way the state can put their seal on it is that they got to be authorized by Congress, which is under the 14th Amendment, to keep you a slave. Now, would you do what you have done all your life if you knew that you was not black? Would you carry it like that? Would you live the life that you have lived if you knew you were something else other than who you thought you were? No. I'm not going to give you that much credit. Would you carry it like that? Would you live the life that you have lived if you knew you were something else other than who you thought you were? No. 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 I'm not going to give you that much credit. No. So let's be who they say you are. They said on your birth certificate, you were, I was born in 42. So I lived through all of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I come through the color part, the Negro part, and if you call us black at that time, them were fighting words.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That was in the early 50s. Then Jan Brown came along, let the brother say he got proud and stuff. Oh, boy, here we go. Okay? And every 10 years, we've been changing names ever since
then.
That's
right.
Okay? That's too many names for one nation to be when every time when they're tied you yesterday, they're tied you today. And I'm their daddy, too. Now pick another people. Okay? And don't be leaving on these Indian tribes. Leave them alone. Leave your children. We, the ancient one, we are the mothers and fathers of the entire human family. Every nation on earth, including the Chinese and Japanese, they owe their debt to you.
Right.
If you don't believe me, ask them.
Mm-hmm.
Ask them. We just talked to one of the greatest martial artists, a couple of them here,
that's
the
right.
Hakabe, our grandmothers. Ask them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't travel the world, but all of them, ask them. Talk to any Japanese, who your daddy?
Who your daddy?
So what you have to do, you've got to get rid of those things that have been burying you.
That's right.
Okay? Because here, your freedom is here. You have a weapon of mass destruction above the neck. You got to use it. You got to start thinking for yourself. All right? And especially you, brother, get your, look, that book, get you some book, anything that's got Moorish on it, get it. Okay? At least start with your own people. Because ain't nobody else going to tell you. Okay? That's why I put on the flyer. Look, you, all the universities you've been to, PS number so-and-so, said you have not been to no school in the United States that taught you about you.
That's right. That's right.
Not one.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So where else can you get it from but your own? It takes a chicken to teach a chicken how to be a chicken. Now, you can add all the science you want to that, it still will come out the same thing. It takes a Moorish American to teach a Moorish American how to be a Moorish American. Okay? It takes an ancient one to teach you how to be an ancient one. Okay? Do you know within your attributes that you have the power to stop all those other people from thinking?
That's right.
They can't agree on nothing. You can jumble their mind up so bad they can't get the two of them can't get together and agree on nothing.
That's right.
I'll pull the trigger. I got the submarine. They be down there till they die. Because they can't even remember how to get up. You can stop them from thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Once you're in your own proper status. Okay? Because this is the power that God has. Remember how you were made, how wonderfully you were put together. Okay? Yeah, I know you're going to write, yeah, I'm God. Don't get crazy. No. See, it's an educated system for you to learn. It don't take long, okay? All you got to do is realize your godly attributes, your divine attributes that you have within you, okay? And it comes out, all right? It's nothing that your mother and father can give you. Because that's where you inherited your instability from in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Your parents could not give you your ability. They could not give your spirit. That's the two nostrils to breathe the breath of life in you. They couldn't give you a spirit nor a soul to think with. They couldn't do that. But they can give you with a body of flesh.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you look like them. Okay? But that soul you got, that's yours. Okay? That's all you. And you can walk around that crazy with all you want to. It's still going to be there. You can hump the ground and you still got to deal with that soul.
That's right.
That's, because that's your garden. That's your garden. You've got to cultivate it with wisdom that's up to you. Now, you can duck here in long as you're in the flesh. You can run down the streets of Oregon, down the alleys, and duck and dodge all you want to. But once you hit the grave, ain't no hiding place.
Huh.
So you're going to have to solve the same problem there as well as here. So you might as well get your act together now. Okay? It will not go to the grave with you. Now what I'm going to do, because there's so much that, you know, we wanted to go into. I hope y'all invite me back a little later so we can have more time. There's maybe 2 or 3 days of it, okay? But look, what I'm going to do, I'm going to open up the floor, and I ain't scared none of you. Just come on. Come on with it. Any question that you may have, you know. Yes, please, if you don't mind, stand up and identify yourself.
My name is Dale. We're going to talk about the birth certificate.
Mm-hmm.
I recently discovered that original birth certificate will state that your parents, race they are Negro, my mom's a Negro, my dad's a Negro, therefore I'm a Negro.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, my birth certificate is the original.
Mm-hmm.
But the new one I just picked up recently
got a dumb code on it.
It doesn't have anything on it.
Right.
What's going on?
The mother's been kicking butt.
Islam, goodness, what's your name?
It's been...
Islam?
Yes.
People who have questions, please step to the mic. It'd be much easier than everybody could hear.
Oh, excellent idea.
Okay.
Okay.
Just
thank
press
you.
This
thank
button
you.
Right here in the front and then address your questions.
Yeah, good idea. Thank you, Marty.
So...
would you repeat the question for the sake of the record?
Okay, the question is that my original birth certificate states that my mom's a Negro, my dad's a Negro, therefore I'm a Negro.
Mm-hmm.
But the one I just got recently doesn't indicate no race.
Okay.
What's up with that? Can
okay.
you share some light on it?
Sure can. No problem. It all started with the Social Security Administration back here maybe about 30 years ago. They started placing the people, the race, according to the number. Okay, it started with the Social Security Administration. Then it went on to DMVs, and then ultimately to the birth certificate. Now, what that means is that they still got it Negro, Black, and Color because they don't know what else to call you. But they got it under code numbers. So what you do is you contact the Bureau of Vital Statistics and find out what system the state of Oregon, let's just say, is used. All of them got a system for their code, like DMV, Department of Motor Vehicle, okay, Social Security, and also the birth certificate. They all got codes. Find out which code. What I mean by code is this. The code tells you what race or nationality that they're identifying you. It's got Black, white, other, et cetera. Okay? Depending upon the state, the code changes with every state. States are like prisons. There ain't no two of them alike. Okay? But each one has a code system. They stop putting it on the birth certificate. As far as your race is concerned, your nationality, what they call nationality. When they found out that Moors were raising so much sand, taking them to court and saying, they stopped it. And right now, I don't think you can get a genuine birth certificate probably any state throughout the United States right now. They stopped maybe a good... They started maybe about 15 years ago, and now, right now, it's about in every state right now.
The other question, so is Black a race?
No, it's a slave. Black is a slave name.
So when a police report comes back and identify my race as Black, is that me?
No.
So
not after the day.
That's my question. Thank you.
Now see another thing, and I'm gonna get your answer. Thanks, sister, for stepping up. Another thing about that race thing. Let me tell you how important that is. Remember I told you, when it comes to courts of law, they got two things, okay, that you're concerned about. One is status, and that's your true identity. The other one is jurisdiction. So let's forget about the jurisdiction part. Let's concentrate on the status, all right? The courts own you as Negro, colored, and Black, according to their law, okay? 14th Amendment. But now that you're a Morris American, and you're accepting the ancestral lineage of your forefathers, and no one can change you from the descendant nature of your forefathers unless their power is extended beyond God, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you accepting and you proclaiming your own status, they don't have the jurisdiction over that.
Mm-hmm.
None.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Okay. Yes, sister?
Yeah, I understand that we bought into this de facto relationship. through our birth certificate, which is called, I know on my birth certificate, it says it's a bank note.
It says what else?
It's a bank note. At the,
you're
very
right.
bottom, it says bank note.
Okay.
And now I just want a little more understanding with through the UCC and through the Joint House Resolution.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to deal with the last one, and that's justice. And the way that is achieved in having correct justice is you have to understand that love, truth, peace, freedom should already be achieved with you, which will equal your operation with justice. Law is something that don't show up to a courtroom until you get there. Prior to that, they are enforcing statutes and ordinances until you get there with law. So it behooves us to learn about law, learn about love, truth, peace, and freedom. And how to get these things and how to maintain them so that we can act in law properly and achieve justice. You want to be just. You want to examine every item or whatever you're dealing with in a just fashion. You want to issue justice. Sometimes a lot of people may think your justice is a little bit hard. But you got to be just. You have to use the talents and tools that you have to issue what is commonly called justice. And, of course, what I'm talking about is something that starts with you. And, of course, we know that there's external justice and things that's going on. But you have to learn these things, and it behooves you to start from the ancient records, because in the ancient records lie the answer. And you can glean a lot of information, and you can use this information in today's society. We think that, a lot of us think that because times change and we get, it's 2013, that is a new age and this, that, and the other. But one thing is certain methods and techniques change, but principles never change. So we need to learn and master the principles of justice. And just like the Grand National Chairman spoke of earlier about the Ten Commandments being taken from the ancient laws of Maat and ancient Kemet, let's go back to the original source and let's read them and then compare them with what we have now and it's called the Ten Commandments. And you discover exactly where it came from. Okay? And keep in mind, tomorrow I'm going to add all of the survival information into the Tahaka's archives, and then we'll be coming back later on with another broadcast. But in the meantime, I've been your host, Tahaka Amana Elbay, and I certainly appreciate you, all of you, for tuning in and listening to this broadcast. And I hope that you have gotten something out of it. You all have a good
Thank you. Thank you.